The Adonis Audio Experience. Welcome everyone to the Adonis Audio Experience. I'm joined by Jose Manuel on this beautiful spring slash summer day. Jose, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing good. Good morning, everybody. You know, it is beautiful out. You know, ready? We finally got some weather to cooperate with us, and I'm, you know, just ready to do another one of these, having a good time doing them.
Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun with you and I just putting these episodes together, talking about 90s basketball, talking about Mike Jordan. I did want to get into the past weekend, which it's so funny. We get so consumed into what we're doing. We got to give a shout out to our moms, man.
Oh, it was great. I spent Mother's Day with my mom. You know, and my aunt who, you know, recently became a mother as well.
God bless. God bless.
You know, happy Mother's Day to all the Mother's Day out there. You know, you guys are always number one.
God bless to all the mothers. And for you in the audience to know, Jose and I have different mothers, same father, right? And, sure. You know, we got to spend it in our own space. You know, my mom's in Florida. Jose, your mom's over in Jersey, right?
Yeah, she's still in Jersey. She's still here in Jersey. Been here for, you know, 25 years now.
That's awesome. And then our papa was a Rolling Stone. He's doing awesome too, man. So
yeah, he's the leader of the band, you know.
He's the leader of the band. That's pretty awesome, man. So, you know, happy Mother's Day to all the moms that are out there. And you know, we hope that you enjoyed it. And as the weather gets better, it's just going to be more enjoyable to spend some time outside. And if you're tuning into this show, don't forget, just plug in your favorite headset, whether it's some Apple EarPods or like I use the Jabras. Shout out to Jabra. Feel free to plug that in when you're listening to these podcasts. So, you know, just getting into it, obviously, Michael Jordan, episode 7 and 8 of The Last Dance. And, you know, the only thing I want to start off with into this episode is just to talk about, I'm just simply proud that we lived in an era that produced classic basketball nights where Michael Jordan was just dominating the sport. I mean, he was the epitome of competition. And ultimately, that is the beauty of sports. We don't just watch it just to watch it. We don't just watch sport just for participation. We watch it because we are keeping score. And that score, whether it's favorable to your side or not, it produces a certain emotion. Whether you're up or down, you are engaged emotionally. And sports and competition, it just brings passion to all of us. And those are some of the things that I really took note as we get into it. And Jose, man, what kind of mark did episode 7 and 8 leave on you? Or what are some of your thoughts on it that you want to pontificate on?
Well, I love the part when Jordan was sitting there talking to the guy, and it's almost like he was like, listen, I have to push people that hard because, you know, I didn't ask anybody to ever do anything that I wasn't willing to do. But he was, you know, but to be number one, to be that great, to be on top like that, you have to make those huge, crucial sacrifices. And I always make these parallels to my favorite sport. I've made that known, football. But yep. When you talk to anybody that's ever been on the Patriots, and they're like, and then they go to another team and they're like, it's night and day, the level of commitment, the level of focus, the level of preparation. And, you know, that's why they win so much more than everybody else. Because, you know, a lot of teams win one, you know, yeah. They've won six, you know, like Jordan won six, ironically enough, it's the same number. But you know, I just I that's really what stuck to me from Sunday.
That's pretty awesome, and I just love how it opens right up into that 1998 interview with Jerry Krause. And, you know, that dude is just straight up a mental midget. I mean, I've said it in the past, but he talks about, you know, there's no backstabbing going on here in the Bulls organization and all that kind of shit. And, you know, he just constantly wanted to make this emphasis that organizations create the championships. And it really became a huge divide between Jordan and Jerry Krause's philosophy and ultimately all the players, because Krause alienated everybody. So it's like we get that whole Jerry Krause moment sprinkled back in again. And it just reminded me of how unpopular that dude was and how much, honestly, he really broke up a dynasty of a team that probably had a couple more chips left into them. And I know you mentioned this at some point in the other episodes that we talked about. And then we get into where they sweep the Nets and how Jordan is just kind of getting tired. And, you know, he's getting into that zone like in 1993. He's feeling that same way in 98.
I wanted to just go back to Jerry Krause real quick.
Yeah.
But, you know. That, you know, he's definitely made in this documentary as the bad guy, and he is. But the other Jerry, being Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, is definitely getting let off the hook because he allowed all this to go on. And he should have put that guy in his place a long time ago. And I get that. I mean, I'm happy that they don't take away the footage where Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan are flat out just berating Jerry Krause. There was just no love lost there between them. But, you know, as the owner, when it gets this ridiculous, you know, you need to step in and tell him, you know, you're not blowing up my team 2 years with 2 years left in this run. I mean, who would do that? And I just don't understand how he just allowed that to happen. You know, I don't know if they beat the Spurs in 99, but they had the right to be there. You know, they might not have been able to bring everybody back as well.
Yeah.
But just that, I just wanted to add that part.
Yeah. No, you know what? That's true. Jerry Reinsdorf. I'm probably chopping his name up like hell right now, but he definitely allowed it. But why do you think that is? Like why is it that Jordan's got this affinity and respect for Jerry Reinsdorf and for Jerry Krause? Jerry Krause is the lone villain in this, and that's what it seems like.
You know, I mean, when you sign the checks, you know, you get a level of respect with that, but He did an atrocious job with that because, you know, he really just hid behind him. And, you know, and I also find it disingenuous when he's talking about, you know, Pippen being underpaid. You know, you could have rectified that. You're the one guy that can rectify that, you know, and talking about how the contracts are unfair. So I don't know. I feel like he did a poor job. He, you know, we commend owners when they sign, when they hire a general manager and get out of the way and let them run the team. But sometimes they run the team into the ground. You know,
yeah,
you know, and it's been a generation now. And, you know, he let Krause try to rebuild that team and it didn't work. And then he lets Krause go.
So Jerry Krause,
like 0405.
So Jerry Krause is, you know, it's so funny when I think about Jerry Krause, the only guy I think about is, who do you think?
I don't know. Somebody with a Napoleon complex.
Yeah. Yeah. So who do we know within the basketball organization that has a Napoleon complex?
You're thinking of your guy, Mr. James Dolan.
Yes. This is James Dolan to a T. This is insecure, mental midget, just do what the hell you want, James Dolan, Jerry Krause. These guys are the same person. You know, and I just can't stop thinking about the correlation between the two. The only bad part is that you could fire Jerry Krause. You can't get rid of James Dolan.
You can't get rid of James Dolan.
And that's the shit, man. And not only that, Jerry Krause still brought together a team that had, you know, many pieces that were complementary to the Jordan and Pippen nucleus versus to Dolan, what the hell has Dolan done, man?
Yeah. Look, Krauss, to his credit, Krauss built the team. He didn't draft Jordan, but he drafts everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and he was the one. He was the one that picked up Phil Jackson. Phil Jackson's probably never getting a job. I mean, he was coaching in Albany in some, you know, some, I forget the name of the league.
Yeah.
He goes and he handpicks him to put him on that staff.
Yeah.
So he did some good things. I think he just never felt like he got his proper credit, and that's why he acted out that way.
And up until that point, you're right, man. Phil Jackson was like an acquired taste.
he still is.
And then, yo, what about that BJ Armstrong moment, man?
So, you know, they're talking about, I think a few times in the documentary, they every time the Bulls lose a game, they have to embellish excuses for Mike, you know, and I think it's a little much if I, you know, in the, but, you know, the B.J. Armstrong, you know, that game, too, when they lose, like, they were never going to lose that series to Charlotte. They had a bad night. They lost. And, like, you know, B.J. Armstrong hits, like, an 18-footer, you know, to basically seal the game. He don't even celebrate like that or anything. And, like, they talk about whatever he did there, like, it set Mike off. No, they were just going to beat Charlotte because they were going to beat Charlotte. And Charlotte wasn't a very good team.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it's always got to be, I just feel like, an embellished thing a little bit. In at least in episode 8, like, he didn't do anything crazy there. He's, you know, he was just happy to hit an 18-footer. They were happy they didn't get swept, you know.
Yeah,
and I just,
and then they, you know, get into that LeBradford Smith moment.
You know, that's the same thing with LeBradford Smith. And, you know, I hear people go on ESPN after the documentary, and they say that that's true. That was a real thing. I mean, LeBradford Smith. I can't be the only guy that had to go and Google this guy on Sunday. You know, he went and got a whole bunch of fame after that. He was in the league for 3 years and never averaged more than double figures, and then went to play the rest of his career overseas. I mean, that guy probably has a regular 9-to-5 job now.
Wow.
Like, I just, you know, like, okay, he shut him down that day. I mean, he had the game of his life against the Bulls.
Wow.
But I do think it's those two were a little played up. And if I could mention, let's just mention it now.
Yep.
In 95, when the Bulls lose to the Magic, okay, they lost to them straight up, you know. And it's all about, you know, oh, Jordan has his off. He has his baseball body.
Yep.
You know, that could be well and good, but they don't talk about the fact that that was the worst roster the Bulls put together in the whole run of the 90s. That's the only year in that run where they don't have Horace Grant or Dennis Rodman.
They didn't have a power forward.
Yeah, and John Paxson had retired. You know, like, they were a 500 team. They were 3 games above 500 when he came back. Like, they were messing with not making the playoffs that year. Like, they just weren't that good. So Jordan came and still elevated them a level. But, you know, it just, you know, they always have to make extra excuses. They just lost to Orlando, you know, and history's treated them well for losing to Orlando, because if they beat Orlando and mess around and get to the finals and then lose to a better team, that scene, you know, history tells you that's a worse season, you know.
Yeah.
Lose early.
Yeah. You know? Well, it's funny because this whole series just, you know, creates these urban legends of the GOAT, right? And it's all these subplots and stories that live in infamy that is associated to Michael Jordan's greatness or his heirness. But, you know, Michael Jordan plays a huge part in making sure that those stories live on. And, you know, he's like that. He's just like that. He, I was actually watching his Hall of Fame speech the other night, and it was funny because, you know, when you're inducted into the Hall of Fame, you have someone who kind of introduces you to the podium. And
yes, you pick somebody to introduce you.
Yeah, and the person you pick to introduce you is someone who was a mentor or someone who had a great impact in your life and kind of went from there. And I forget who exactly Jordan picked, but the person he picked
David Thompson.
He picked David Thompson. And yes. And David Thompson happened to be an all-star caliber player in college. He was a great college player. And yeah,
at Jordan's rival school. So I think it actually surprised a lot of people.
Yeah. And so
yeah.
Jordan then says, you know, I picked David Thompson. I know why I picked David Thompson. David knows why he picked David Thompson. But I know when I called him and I asked him to do this, I shocked the shit out of him.
Yeah. I remember that.
And he's like, I know I shocked the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And you know, that's just a testament to Jordan. But the point I wanted to get into was that he gets really emotional. Obviously, it's a Hall of Fame speech. When he opens up the speech, I did like how he just starts saying, in all those championships, all those videos, you saw Pippen and you saw me in every single one of them. And I like how he opened that up. But here's where Jordan and his competitive nature and the urban legends that are just these stories that are told about him just live on. When he talks about getting cut in high school, he's like, here, I've invited Leroy Smith to sit here in the stands. And he was like, Leroy, same as he is now, same as he is then. He was 6'7" and 200 and something. And, you know, had skills that were just, just decent skills, nothing great about him. Right. But yet, yeah, the coach picked him over me in my senior year of high school. And he was just like, hey, man, I wanted to make sure that dude knew that, hey, man, you made the wrong decision, dude. And it was so funny because the entire crowd went crazy and they were cracking up, everybody in the audience. And it just, he never forgot about that shit. He never forgot about the guy who took his place in high school, Leroy Smith. He invited the dude to his Hall of Fame induction. I mean, that just tells you the kind of dude that Jordan is, man. He's relentless. He's crazy.
You know, that's the kind of guy he is. And I mean, I remember a lot of people like having issue with his Hall of Fame speech. And I forget the person who I was watching almost offending him. I was like, I don't know what you guys expected. This is who he's been his whole life. He's not going to change it one night. This is what he's going to be. He's going to attack people over, you know, petty shit at this point.
Yes.
You know, 35 years later, when the game's been won and you won, Jordan won, it's over. Yeah. You know, and he and he's still like, no, you cut me from the high school team, and you know, in this one, and it's just, you know, I mean, he complained about the ticket prices to the thing because it might have increased it that year.
Dude.
Like, you know, he just, that's him, you know. At least he doesn't change. At least he doesn't change.
Well, oh, my God. And, you know, speaking of retirements, I wanted to get back into that 93 where Jordan announces his retirement. Obviously, we know his dad dies, and it's just a very sad time in sports. Just having his best friend pass away, the person he leaned on to the most, his father, who was his best friend as well. And then Jordan goes into the retirement mode. And it's funny because that retirement speech was bigger than all of sports. It was crazy how obsessed people got. And it was almost like that retirement speech was like, where were you in life when Jordan announced his first retirement? That's the kind of moment it was like. It was just crazy. And then when Jordan gets into the speech, he basically says that, hey, listen, well, I'm retiring, but you know, retirement just means that I can go do whatever I want. And you know,
definitely,
that also means that I can maybe even come back one day. So it's crazy how Jordan always wanted you to feel that he was going to come back to whoop that ass. And he always wanted to, even in his retirement Hall of Fame speech, he talks about that too. He says, hey, you never know. At 50, you might see me just lacing up my shorts and just coming back on the court.
At the press conference, I found it interesting that whoever introduced him, he's only 9 years into his career at this point when he's going to leave.
Yeah.
And that person at the news conference introduces him as the greatest basketball player to ever play. So they already thought that in 93, he didn't even have to come back and have that three-peat. Like, you know,
Yeah.
It's crazy how they already thought it, you know? And yeah, I mean, that the interview, I mean, the speech, you know, I was too young, but I mean, I could just imagine somebody in the middle of their prime just leaving and they're like, I'm going to go, like LeBron James saying, I'm going to go play football for a couple years right now. I mean, that's out of this world.
LeBron would probably be a freaking killer tight end if he went and played football. He'd probably be phenomenal in football.
You know, if he can stay healthy, that's the name of the game. You know, he's not going to get used to hitting low like that. He ain't going to like that too much.
Yeah.
He chose the right sport.
He don't like to get hit, period. But, you know, back to where you were saying, you're right, man. People were labeling Michael Jordan the greatest ever by his third championship. And I think it put some context into his airness, Jordan's greatness, because he won three more after that. He won three more after people already labeled him the greatest ever. But I think a big part about that too is that Jordan had this fear factor about him and he relished in it. I don't know if you noticed that in the episodes where Jordan is like being that tough guy. He's being that bully where he's like in practice and he's like, hey, shh, I just told you to get the ball. And he's looking at them and he's like using his two fingers like, come on, man, I need your eyes to focus, you know, and I don't know if you noticed that intensity during those practices.
Yeah, I mean, no, he rode those guys. I mean, that Scotty Burrell guy. And I saw a current interview with him. You know, he seemed to be all right with it. But I mean, he really caught the right guys for it, because I think some people, you know, there might have been more fistfights than just that Steve Kerr one. You know, if he had a different, you know, a different group of characters over there, because to get, you know, to have to lead in that way, you know, there's other ways to do it. But if that's the way you feel like you need to do it, you know, he definitely demanded an incredibly high standard for himself, and for the team. You know,
he did. And one moment that I noticed, and you know what, it's why, to me, you can never say Scottie Pippen would have rolled these Bulls to a championship.
Are you going to go to the Kukoc game here? The Kukoc game?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is 94. It's 93-94 against the Knicks.
Scottie is having a monster year. Scottie is leading the team. Scottie wants to take on that alpha role within the organization and the team. And what does Scottie do? Scottie, at the end of the game, Phil makes the decision for Kukoc to get that last shot. And let's be real. Kukoc's shot was great. Kukoc could shoot. And
it was a great call.
Scottie didn't like the call. So Scottie quit on this team. Scottie sat on the bench and did not come in the game. And we have to emphasize this point, because you're, in my opinion, you're automatically eliminated from any top 10 or 15 talk when you quit in the playoffs on your team. And to me, that was a devastating blow. And it was crazy because the teammates talk about it, and they talk about it because they love Scottie. And the fact that Scottie did that, that was like the number one rule. Like, you just knew that was a gimme, that could never happen. No matter how tough the situation got on the court, that could never happen. You could never have a player quit on you. And to have your star player, who everyone admired, and whoever everyone probably liked a little bit better over Jordan, quit on you, it was just intense, to the point that Bill Cartwright, at the end of the game, he goes into the locker room and he stands in front of the team and he comes to tears, crying, talking about, Scottie, man, what you did, you quit on us, man. I can't believe you did that. And I thought that that was just such an intense moment. And it paints a picture of, you know what? Scotty was all world talent. But in Scotty's head, he just never really had all the pieces. Right?
That's definitely a moment he wants to have back. I mean, you can be frustrated at the decision. And then when the decision ends up working too, you know, but you can't, to ask out of a game like that, to be the leader of a team that's fighting for a playoff spot. And, you know, and that's one of the most important seasons in their careers, because for them to be without Mike and almost basically win the same amount of games they did the year before, you know, and I mean, and that series could have went either way. And then, you know, they could end up in the finals without Jordan, and, you know, and that would have put a, you know, would have raised his level, and it would have had to, and actually it would have lowered the mystique of Jordan a little bit. But, you know, it didn't happen that way.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you can't ask out of that game. And Scotty gets off easy, because if Kukoc misses that shot, I mean, with the team in peril like that, there's no way they're going to win in overtime, because the game's tied at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, they could end up getting swept, you know. You know, the series ends up going seven, and they gloss over another thing. They gloss over the historic Hugh Hollins call, which I know was a good – was a benefit to your team in game five of that series, but they don't even they should have showed it, because it's a big deal, because the Bulls, if they don't get that call go against them, they really could have won that series. They could have, you know, broken the Knicks' heart once again, you know. And then what if they end up in the finals without Jordan? You know, that would have been, that would have been something really, really great for them.
Yeah, it would have been, and it didn't play out that way, which again adds to the Jordan mystique. The legend of his airness, which there's some people, man, they're just lucky enough to have all the other pieces fall into play. Like, there's so many what ifs that if they turn the other way, it takes away from the mystique, right? This like flawless personification of someone who is Superman, right? Like when Jordan, like when Jordan come back to the Bulls in 94-95 and he looks at Bill Wellington and he was like, Bill, we finally get a chance to play together. He was like, and then Bill Wellington was like, yeah, Jordan looked at me. He was like, all right, Bill, you better hop on the cape.
You know, because he's Superman, you know, he's Black Jesus, you know, that's,
you know, and that's the point, is that Jordan just laid down the law. Jordan raised the standard, and Jordan in these documentaries, obviously he's adding the emotion for dramatization. It is produced by Jumpman 23, so he's part of this production of The Last Dance. But Jordan almost comes to tears when he talks about his level of intensity, his level of competition, his passion behind what he's doing. He almost comes to tears, man. And man, that was just intense. Just watching and seeing how intense he was about all of it. And if you didn't like it, too bad, because he wasn't gonna stop. He was relentless.
Yeah, very true. And to that, I just wanted to go back, because we went quick with it a little bit with the baseball. I saw an interview with Terry Francona, who was his minor league manager, and you know, Terry goes into, you know, meeting him. And he's like, Terry says, I want to make sure he was respecting the game. He respected what we did. And, you know, it was 100%, you know, it was 100% that way. He's like, you know, he respected what we did. He was a relentless worker, you know. So even in baseball, he was like, I can do this, you know. And Terry Francona gives him the compliment where he's like, if he dedicated a couple years to this, he was going to end up in the major leagues, you know.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's really cool. You know, that's really, you know, that's really something.
No, that is really something. They said that he had the work ethic that has yet to be seen. It was just tremendous, the work ethic he had in baseball. And that, you know, he was hitting 220 towards the tail end. And, you know, a lot of things people forget is that when Jordan first started in baseball, he went on a 13-game winning streak. Or hitting streak, rather. 13-game hitting streak. And a lot of people could say, oh, yeah, you know, it's probably pitchers throwing lollipops at him because it's Michael Jordan, right? But the truth is that, you know, that guy could hit a fastball. But like everything else, you started throwing him some changeups, curveballs, And then it becomes a different game. And that's what separates a good ball player from someone who's not. But Jordan got better. And the consensus was that if he had the more at-bats, because baseball is just about timing, and if he would have had those at-bats, he would have been at that major league level. And I believe that, you know, and especially given his determination. Now, would he have been a big-time star in baseball? You know, it depends. You know, it's up and down. So we don't know. But no, that's a very fair point. The last part I wanted to touch up on is that, you know, you made a point about Jordan coming back and converting his baseball body into a basketball body, and you were like, man, that's just a pile of shit.
You know, I mean, it was just, you know, they came back. I mean, listen, he comes in 10, like 3-4 games back into the comeback. He goes into the Garden and has the infamous double nickel game, you know, wearing 45. I get that there was a conditioning aspect to it, but I just, you know,
yeah,
sometimes a little, you know, I don't know. I thought it might have been a little much.
Yeah, I will say this. The guy speaking on his behalf, Tim Grover, the trainer, that's being interviewed there.
Yes.
I've read his book, Relentless. That's actually the name of his book, From Good to Great to Unstoppable. And the people Tim Grover has trained is Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, Michael Jordan. What do they all share in common?
Yeah, greatness, you know.
They're all champions. And Tim Grover says that to be relentless, to be great in these competitions, there you have to be a bad guy. And it's so crazy because when BJ Armstrong got asked, is Jordan a good guy? BJ was like, nah. He was like, in order to be that way, you had to have been a bad guy. In order to think that way, to have that kind of focus that way, you've had to have been a bad guy. There's no way he could have been good. And it makes a lot of sense. And Tim Grover talks about that when he gets into the fact that when a lion is a lion, to some, he may appear a bad guy because the lion waits and is patient and captures his prey. And he's not there asking for permission. He's just being. He's just existing. He's using his natural ability and instinct to conquer all. And then you take that same lion and you put him in a zoo, and now he's lethargic. He's roaming around. He's being fed at this, you know, at specific hours. There's no motivation to move on or to grow. And to be relentless, and as Tim Grover puts it, to be a cleaner. He has this theories of closer versus cleaner and how a closer is good. A closer can study tapes. A closer can be consistent. A closer can be very punctual and very good at the fundamentals. But a cleaner throws all of that out of the window and becomes relentless, becomes instinctual. And to some, he is viewed as a bad guy because he's not asking for permission for anything. He's just running right through it. And that's the kind of training that Tim Grover would actually put on some of these athletes, to the point where he would have some athletes that if he said, listen, if you're not going to follow my program to the T, I'm walking. If you cheat, I'm going to know you cheated. If you had sugar, I'm going to know you had sugar. You know why? Because when I put you through my sugar detox, your body's going to react like a heroin addict coming off of heroin would react. You're going to get the shakes. You're going to get the sweats. Your body's going to start reconstructing itself just because you withdrew from sugar. So I'm going to study and I'm going to know how your body's progressing because I understand the science behind it. And he puts all of that into his program. And if he knows you're cheating, he'll find out. He'll know if you had sugar. He'll know how your body's reacting to all that. And he'll kick you off his program. That's how serious Tim Grover is. So to have Tim Grover dedicate his time to Jordan, yeah, everybody looks at it like, yeah, it's Michael Jordan. But Michael Jordan was willing to put in the work of the highest standard to get better. Because when you're a pro athlete, what makes you different than the next athlete in the pros is not necessarily the physicality of it. It's the mental component.
The work you're willing to put in too.
Yes. And it's the 0.1% of improvement that you're willing to put in every day. And those are the biggest differences. And that's what Tim Grover brought to the table. So to see Tim, you know, featured into these series, definitely shed a lot of light, and it shed a lot of light into, you know, Jordan's work ethic and to how great he really was, man.
Yeah, I love when they lose to Orlando and Tim tells, and the trainer tells Mike, he's like, all right, let me know when you want to get together, and he's like, I'll see you tomorrow morning, you know, in 1995, you know, because he's like, I gotta build this body back. And I mean, in some ways, that was probably the perfect person for him, because, you know, the most competitive athlete ever to be with a trainer is going to push you that much extra and challenge you. And if you don't follow his way, you know, and, yeah, you know, to your point with BJ Armstrong, you know, where he wasn't a nice guy, you know, I really keep thinking about one guy when I watch this, you know, I think about Belichick, and I think about that whole system there. And they say, it, you know, it's like, listen, it's a little harder here. It's a little more difficult. It's a little less fun, but the system works. You can't say it doesn't work, you know, and you know, it, and Jordan could say the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
There could have been another way I could have did it, but I learned this way and it worked, you know, it worked really, really well.
Yeah. Well, with that said, this was an awesome episode putting together. Jose, these have been a lot of fun. We got one more episode that's coming up for The Last Dance that's going to be aired this Sunday. And then after that, we're going to be opening up the program to a lot of other things in sports, politics, life. And I'm looking forward to all of it. And, you know, one thing that I am so happy and proud to have taken advantage of is A, sharing these episodes with you, Jose. And second, that, you know, I get to kind of relive this 90s feeling and learn from it too, from a different perspective, because my emotional state was so different in the heartbreaks of the Knicks series and things like that, that I didn't have a chance to really appreciate Jordan and his greatness. So it's nice to be able to do that now and to be able to enjoy his airness. And I'm so glad that I'm able to do that with you, man.
No, it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun. And, you know, with that said, I'm learning a lot because, you know, I was just being a little younger at the time, you know, not really remembering this stuff, just remembering the tail end of 98. I didn't know all the stuff that was going on. And it's, you know, it's crazy to think that, you know, they actually probably could have won another one if the team stays together. You know, it's really cool to look back on that era, you know, and just reminisce about, you know, about a different time.
Yeah. Well, with that said, listen, everybody, get your day going, get your weekend going, and till the next time, peace out.